CIUT 89.5, Toronto.
And it's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And of course, this is coronavirus time, where we all think it's Sunday at 2 o'clock every day of the week. As usual, I believe we have to now be in our report mode. And as usual, we have to talk about what is developing in the world that might not be reaching most Canadians. One of the reasons we have alternative radio is so that voices that are not generally heard and facts that aren't generally talked about get addressed. And of course, the big facts of the day are that the United States is number one. They're going to have 100,000 deaths, more than 1 million cases of COVID-19. And this is all due, according to the leaders of the indispensable country, this is all due to the World Health Organization or China not properly keeping the U.S. and its 800 foreign bases and billions of dollars worth of intelligence gatherers and its diplomats and everybody sufficiently informed. Of course, we have the countries of South Korea, Singapore, Vietnam, neighbors of China, all of whom have acted on the news from the World Health Organization and diligently went about protecting their citizens. Vietnam so successfully that it actually has no deaths. Phenomenal effort, but actually coordinated, civilized addressing of community problems and putting human life first. And this is the reality, the backdrop to our problem, which is to see if it's possible on this planet to bring countries together and to agree on common effort to deal with matters such as this pandemic. And it's a now naked fact that there is one group of nations that is very unhappy at the idea of sharing or working with others if those others do not recognize them as the boss or number one. And of course, I'm referring always to my favorite gang, Five Eyes. So when I do the program, this is the Taylor Report, by the way, CIUT. And I refer to the Anglo-American group led by the United States, and they have a common intelligence formation. They're proud of it. It's a private club, and it's called Five Eyes. They gave themselves the name. But when I say it, I somehow feel sometimes, oh, I'm slipping into the territory of, you know, of a kind of language associated with paranoia or whatever. But thank goodness I have the Globe and Mail. It has served me in so many departments. For example, there's no toilet paper crisis so long as you have a sub to the Globe. But the Globe and Mail, which of course its name was once included Empire, but they thought that was kind of embarrassing, I guess, and they decided to go with Globe and Mail. But page one, it says, Five Eyes allies urge Five Eyes allies urged to lessen dependence on China. And it's written by Robert Fife and Stephen Chase, based in Ottawa. This, of course, is actually kind of boilerplate, because it could be any month of the year, and it could be any year, and Five Eyes would say the same thing, because their job is to make sure that the five English-speaking colonial countries, New Zealand, let's put them first, Australia, the little guys, Canada, UK, and United States, they are the ones who share this kind of common historical perspective, and we try to underline that on this show. We do have other outcroppings. We have NATO, and we have other power structures in which they have a kind of weighted position. But going to where we are with the crisis, the pandemic, the World Health Organization actually functioned, since it is about 194 countries in it, I believe, and they together put up funds and they send representatives, and it is a collegial operation. And so when you have the privileged gangs show up, they are always a little uncomfortable. Well, they could be comfortable. Other people always say, let's make nice, but for some reason, they always have to remind everybody of themselves. And that's where we are in terms of this fork in the road I refer to often. That is that the pandemic has brought humanity together, facing a recognized threat, and it is, you'd say, well, you know, it'd be nice if this were all just to play softball together, but this actually is one to fight for our lives. And the question is, well, can we strengthen this, and can we go forward, and can we lessen tensions between some of the states? And that brings us to how you talk about this problem of the United States-led effort to try to offload its responsibilities onto others, China, namely, and of course to the WHO. And we have to, in Canada and elsewhere, wherever you might be, not accept the ignorant and, I'd say, barbaric approach being taken by the main capitals of the world and their, of course, their media minions. The New York Times, for example, is talking about this issue of the World Health Organization. They say tensions grow between Washington and Beijing. That's roughly their framing of this issue. You're going to hear the expression framing a few times. I'm borrowing from Diana Johnson's, from her, at her text, Circle in the Darkness, memoir of a world watcher. And she's a very outstanding writer, and somebody who talks about this issue, framing of this. The New York Times wants to frame it as, oh, we're having a kind of problem between two great powers. See, that neutralizes it and hides what it actually is. It's actually U.S. aggression, U.S. insecurity, and U.S. illegal practices, and its tendency now. We're in a zone, time zone now, and it's accelerating, where hardly a week goes by without the U.S. tearing up an agreement, an important treaty involving, say, nuclear weapons, the Open Skies Agreement, and applying illegal sanctions to countries, which, though they're illegal, any state wishing to violate the illegal sanctions realizes they could get harmed. So they follow along as the bully does this. So this is not an issue between a country, two countries that historically, you know, don't like each other, or etc. That's a false picture. The real picture is that the United States and its gang called the Five Eyes has decided that they don't like the way history seems to be moving. And the leader of the gang has decided to kick over the table. All night long, he's been asking for a new deck of cards, and he's been playing one, trying to cheat and fudge reality. But this pandemic has been a real shock, and we're far from seeing the end of it. And the episode that we need to analyze is the one of the decision by Canada and Australia and some others to go to the World Health Assembly and see how much problem they could make at a time of a pandemic when we're trying to mutually bring together all scientific and medical personnel available and possible, in which countries like Venezuela and Syria and Cuba sit down, brothers and sisters, equals, and work on the same problem. That gives imperialism an itch when they hear Venezuela, Syria, Cuba, others, that they have crossed off on their list, and who those countries that they intend to try to remove. So all last week we were told there's going to be a move at the World Health Assembly, which is sort of like a political discussion place for the World Health Organization. Listen, it was a flat failure, by the way. This is a spoiler alert. It was a flop. Canada participated in a flop. Australia did a nosedive off the 30-foot board and made a complete fool of itself. A flop. By the way, they were pushed to the front by, of course, the big guy who said, you know, we think you guys could help out by saying you're going to bug the China or the World Health Organization. So Australia started a little thing about how they were going to demand that we find out what happened in Wuhan and find out what happened in China. That was what they said. That's what they were going to do. This is their big contribution. What happened is that they didn't get to first base. Everyone agrees that, of course, you wouldn't be scientific, you wouldn't be medically responsible if you didn't say, when this matter is pretty much in hand, we know what we've done over a sufficient period of time, well, of course, we'll investigate, we'll talk to each other. Here's what I did, here's what I said, here's what you said, here are the documents, here's the evidence, and you have, you work together as peers, as equals, equal footing, and you assume the goodwill of that person, that side that you're talking to. You don't assume that you're the prosecutor like Australia and you're going to be the judge and you're going to call somebody out. That isn't how it works. And they found out because when they got to the WHA meeting, all that feather activity and crowing by Australia went down and went nowhere. Nowhere. There was a common resolution backed by China which said, let's look into these matters at the appropriate time. And everybody said, hey, that sounds like a good idea. And that's where they went. That's where that went to. I haven't seen any smart editorials from the Globe, Star, tell explaining to me what a wonderful job Australia did. They were telling us all about it. Oh boy, this is coming. Australia's going to do something. I find it so odd, you know, that Canada gets up in the morning and looks to the West, and you look across the ocean, and the only place they see is Australia. There are a lot of countries out there, but the only place they see is Australia. And so they followed Australia. They all went through their little act and got nothing. Then there was a second game they were playing, and that was, let's see if we can cause a problem by talking about Taiwan. Taiwan, according to the United Nations and everybody else, is there's one China. Taiwan is not that China. Taiwan is part of China. It once claimed to be China. It is sort of an American chameleon, because Taiwan is the island where the Americans brought the retreating, fleeing Chiang Kai-shek and his group, and they kept on claiming that they were China while sitting on Taiwan. But then over the years, they kind of changed the game in terms of what they were going to claim. After everybody agreed there's only one China, and Taiwan is Chinese Taiwan. Incidentally, at the World Health Organization, they sometimes say, well, you know, we've had Taiwan here, so I mean, what is China, why is China objecting to this idea? They forget that they came as Chinese Taiwan. You see, they don't want to do that anymore. Now there's a new game afoot. That's why I say it's a chameleon, and it's made to look whatever the Five Eyes wants it to look like. Incidentally, Canada loves to play the innocent and we're just trying to help out. They're not trying to help out, trying to make as much trouble as possible. They sailed a warship through the Taiwan Straits. That's Chinese waters, a Canadian warship. That is playing in a game you probably don't belong in, but my guess is they were told they better do it. U.S. Navy does it every once in a while. So there were two things played. There was the card of, oh, we're going to put heat on China about Wuhan, and they didn't succeed. Because, look, it's 194 countries. You know what? The world doesn't want to go down that road. And we've been saying on the Taylor Report, don't go down that road. Here's your, by the way, there's a few exits left before you're out of luck. You keep traveling, Five Eyes, down that road, and the rest of the world is going to let you go and see what happens to you. Because the rest of the world doesn't want antagonism. It does not want this hostility. It doesn't want this game of who's the boss. They want a world that is multilateral, in which everybody has equal standing, each state has standing and respect. That's what they want. But this is what they tried for. They said, well, we'll go there and we will raise the Taiwan matter. Guess what? That didn't go anywhere either. That was another flop. But, you know, since they're a gang, I assume that that's what they wanted. That they know that the rest of the world has seen this matter. They know the rest of the world does know. Ask the Nigerians, the Kenyans, the Tanzanians, South Africans, South Americans, people of states of South Asia. See, they know there's one China, and they are not part of this. But this is because this is a Western outpost game. They want to play it. And just to give you a little taste of this, sorry, I would call it the stupidity of this, and some of its origins. One of the big players who likes to join up, and it's often asked about, why does Japan get involved in this stuff? They've been, throughout post-World War II history, they've been a kind of honorary Western state. So I was looking into it, and I found a nice item that I thought should be shared with the listeners to the Taylor Report. And it's a book written by a Japanese politician and historian. His name is Yoshiburo Takeyoshi. He wrote his book in 1905, and he had been touring the newly conquered part of China called Formosa. By the way, the Americans used to call Taiwan Formosa. Taiwan has a problem not knowing who it is. It's almost like the UK, whether it's England, Britain, Great Britain, whatever it is. And his book was titled Formosa, and as I say, Japanese, I left out the funny part, didn't I? Japanese rule in Formosa. And he is, I'm going to say it again, Yosaburo Takeyoshi, 1905. So he's introducing the book. By the way, he's a very celebrated man. He had a wonderful academic career, and he was quite well known in Japanese politics. So he said that in writing this book, he knows he would be compared to people who written about the British Empire. And he had a sentence that goes about the imperialism of Chamberlain and Rhodes. And he says, "I would not for a moment venture to class myself with these two great English politicians, but shall be satisfied if this book of mine shall serve even in a small measure to make known the actual conditions and potentialities of Formosa." That's 1905. They held on to it until 1945. The grip is kind of loose now. They lost it. And in, he says further, in introducing the book to warm us all up, he says, "In short, Japan can point to her successes thus far in Formosa as a proof of her worthiness to be admitted into the community of the world's great colonial powers." And so, unfortunately, you know, his guys didn't do so well, but they stay in the game. And because they became a stronghold of the struggle against the Soviet Union at the, after World War II, it gets a place at the table. So they came with the Taiwan Resolution. They said, Canada signed it kind of embarrassedly, but you know, this all ought to be pushed out into the open, you know. We all have to talk about this, in my opinion, because people who are doing this are leading us into a dangerous situation. So they tried for this resolution, and it got nowhere. It went down the drain. Very deservedly went down the drain. And the question we ought to have here is, how come in Canadian politics, in the parliament, there is nobody asked, what is going on here? Couldn't somebody say, do we really, in the middle of the pandemic, want our representatives to be trying to create an embarrassing moment, because that's all it was, embarrassing moment at the World Health Assembly? Is that's a smart move? The NDP thinks that's smart? Bloc Québécois, you think that's smart to start raising this issue and to actually embarrass us all by saying it has some relevance to the struggle against the pandemic, while at the same time you say, well, of course Taiwan hasn't had a problem. They apparently heard from the World Health Organization. Apparently they heard from China. There's a difficult thing here called the coronavirus. And they went to work and they kept their numbers down. Incidentally, there were medical representatives from Taiwan who went to Wuhan. They went there. So what is your point, Canada? What's your point, Australia? What is your point, Japan? What is it you really are up to? You just want to see if you can make a problem. And then, you know what's going to happen? Your group is going to get smaller, but you keep hugging each other like a bunch of morons. Except that the leader of the group, of course, is armed to the teeth and has 800 bases. But you're going to just keep following along, lame-brained and all. I don't get it. And I don't understand why the NDP, who originally used to be kind of associated with ideas of peace, disarmament, better relations between states, how come you want to go and pick a fight that you're going to lose, by the way, that all you blue-eyed white Anglos, you're going to get together with your Japanese friend who wants to be like you, according to Takeshoi. He wants to be like them. You're going to lose because the world doesn't want this. They want an end to it, actually. So there were two great embarrassing losses, huge embarrassing losses. And the way you know it, they were huge and embarrassing, is that nobody here talks about it. Globe didn't have a rumination yet They'll think of some. The star hasn't ruminated about it. Actually, they're getting ready to pick up the act and move it to Hong Kong. They think they won't need to talk about that now. But this is, frankly, imperialist politics. And it is harming the struggle against the pandemic, harming it. And when we say pandemic, this ain't the end of the line for pandemics. We're going to have more. And, of course, World Health, the reason they all got together, the groups, is that the state is so that we could fight this thing. So Donald Trump says, well, I'm giving you 30 days. Like he's, what, the World Health Organization employee? Okay, 30 days, change your act or I'm out of here. But where is anybody in Canadian Parliament actually got guts enough to say, what the hell is he talking about? Why don't we say to him, cease and desist, knock it off? But that isn't happening. And to me that, and this is the Taylor Report, when I say me, this is where we better decide to say we're not in favor of breaking up these international institutions, which are participated in by other self-respecting states who have a right to be heard and who we wish to cooperate with. And there's no sign that Canada won't agree, along with the other members of the gang, to keep being a problem, while the real problem, which is a U.S. ruling group out of, frankly, can't find its mind, it's lost its bearings. The wonderful man everybody said was cool, Obama, was a very foolish warmonger. You remember Obama, he was going to close Guantanamo. Tried to overthrow states, laughed at and demanded that people step down just because he said step down. That's outrageous. And you have Trump. Now, Trump is every bit as outrageous, but there isn't anything to choose. The same if you're going to talk about Joe Biden. Joe Biden promises that he's going to be just as mean and meaner. Actually, the position of the leaders of the U.S. at this moment, of the Democrats, is that they're tougher. Actually, this goes back to Kennedy when he debated with Nixon. About what? Taiwan. Pardon me, it was Formosa then. See? Get again? So, it was who's the toughest? Now at this point in history, the world wants an end to this I'm the toughest business. They want an end to wars of intervention, so-called humanitarian intervention, etc. And the pandemic, as tragic as it has been, was again an opportunity for international organizations to come together, or members of international organizations to come together and be heard. And of course, among those who was heard loudest and clearest was the People's Republic of China, because it has 1.4 billion people, and it has public health system, and it has a population that it provides confidence in the leadership of the country, something of which Obama and Bush and Trump cannot claim. As a matter of fact, the United States turns disunity into a brag. Oh, we don't agree about anything. He says you can all congregate for church, and even though it might be dangerous, and the other guy says, I don't think so. They don't have a leader on these subjects. And they have a governor system. The governor of this place thinks, the governor of that place, which is a wonderful holdover from the Civil War when the South was determined to maintain racial superiority and white supremacy, and the governors had to have a lot of strength, and so they gave it to them. And so they can harm as many people as they like, particularly people of color. This is the Taylor Report. I want to call something else to your attention. You probably didn't see, but I think it's important detail. Mr. Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, He was making comments. I had Star didn't cover him, and the Globe didn't cover him. So you're listening to the Potato Report, and I cover Lazarov. He seems like a decent guy. He's a lot smarter than Pompeo. Poor Pompeo around Lazarov wouldn't be able to get out of the shade. So let us go to what he had to say about the World Health Organization. He says, I think WHO experts must be supported and encouraged in every way rather than accused without grounds. This is especially true since the overwhelming majority of WHO secretariat employees come from the countries that are the strongest critics of the WHO. They are demanding a drastic reform of the organization, everything short of closing it down. Representatives of the U.S., France, Italy, Ireland, Spain, Australia, Portugal, and Britain amount to over 30% of the WHO specialists, 30%. That is, people who deal professionally with epidemics and healthcare in general. The majority of Western countries have many more specialists there than they are entitled to by their quota. Out of about 2,100 specialists, one-third come from Western countries. Italy, Canada, and Australia have about 60 employees each. China has fewer than 40, and Russia has 20. Even if China or any other non-Western country had a malicious plan to use the WHO for its narrow interests, how can 40 people do this if they're confronted by over 700 specialists from Western countries, which are united by allied commitments in NATO and the European Union? I believe it is important to focus now on helping the experts and professionals to develop a vaccine instead of trying to derive some geopolitical, electoral, or other advantages. That was Lazarov speaking about the WHO. Yeah, it turns out that China is not terribly well represented amongst the specialists, and we've referred to poor Dr. Aylmer, who Canada, everybody in Canada should be proud of him. He's one of the specialists. He was doing his work. He didn't understand the political winds that were blowing. And he said, well, I went to Wuhan and I questioned, and he did his work. And he said, they're doing a good job. And he crossed the Rubicon. He said, if I was ill with COVID-19, I'd want to be treated in China. You're not supposed to say that. And this is what Sergei Lazarov is referring to. No. The poor man, the NDP wants him to be summoned. And you know, they wanted him summoned, the conservatives at the parliament, yeah, I've talked about it before, I'm going to repeat myself. The conservatives in parliament, they want to ask him about how come he hung up on a guy asking him about Taiwan. Well, you know, he's a virologist, you know, and that's not quite his territory. But they thought, you know, let's see if we can embarrass him. And of course, it turns out it's Canada. So they said, yes, we're embarrassed for our guy who's doing a professional job. Well, yeah, we're ashamed of him. They have not said anything nice about him since he got them in trouble with number one. The five only have eyes for Washington. So number one is not happy with Dr. Aylmer, and they're asking, well, how come he did that? And so they said, we'll summon him, we'll find out, we'll fix him. Anyhow, this is where we are. Now, there are other matters that I want to make sure we cover here. And it is the Tate Report, it is CIET, bless your hearts. And this is important words from the leader of the People's Republic of China. He doesn't get a lot of quote space in our major media, so I'm going to share with you some of the things he said. This is the most important. He said, China stands for the vision of building a community with a shared future for mankind. Doesn't sound like Trump, does it? China takes it as its responsibility to ensure not just the life and health of its own citizens, but also global public health. For the sake of boosting international cooperation against COVID-19, I would like to announce the following. China will provide US $2 billion over 2 years to help with COVID-19 response and with economic and social development in affected countries, especially developing countries. China will work with the UN to set up a global humanitarian response depot and hub in China to ensure the operation of anti-epidemic supply chains and foster green corridors for fast-track transportation and customs clearance. China will establish a cooperation mechanism. This is my favorite of what he's promising to do. China will establish a cooperation mechanism for its hospitals to pair up with 30 African hospitals and accelerate the building of the Africa Center for Disease Control headquarters to help the continent ramp up its disease preparedness and control capacity. COVID-19 vaccine development and deployment in China, when available, will be made a global public good. This will be China's contribution to ensuring vaccine accessibility and affordability in developing countries. China will work with other G20 members to implement the debt service suspension initiative for the poorest countries. China is also ready to work with the international community to foster support for the hardest hit countries under the greatest strain of debt service so that they can tide over the current difficulties. To conclude, I call on all of us to come together and work as one. Let's make concerted efforts to protect the life and health of people in all countries. Let's work together to safeguard planet Earth, our common home. Let's work together to build a global community of health for all. I thank you. Now, that was the concluding words of President Xi of China. And so we will have a lot of framing work, as Diane Johnson points out, to try to portray that as, let's see, what is it? Authoritarian, arrogant, brutal, etc. All kinds of, there must be an immense vocabulary from the blabbermouths of the West who really can't handle this.